You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
An hour with Michael Peter Langevin, Travel Tales from Unknown Realities. Real life. True stories.
One day I was staring at the clouds and there was a silver dot off on the horizon. And as I watched it, it grew bigger and it turned into this sort of silver football that was floating over me. And I felt almost frozen and I kept staring at it and it got right over me. And then I woke up.
Langevin?
Yes, Michael Peter Langevin.
We can cover all sorts of stuff. I'm going to turn
I usually do.
Okay, well, yeah. you're versatile. You talked about a portal. All of a sudden, people are experiencing and talking about portals and being able to tell a story, going into and coming back. I want to hear your story.
As we've talked in the past, I've gone to Latin America quite a bit, spent a lot of time down there, and one of my favorite places is Lake Titicaca. On the Peruvian side, on the northern Peruvian side, there are ruins. And in those ruins, there is this carving, as there are all over the Andes. And the carving is called Aramu Maru. And it's two huge lines cut in and a couple of lines cut across a solid stone wall, and then at the foot of it is a step up, and there is a doorway, sort of a at the top, sort of a key-shaped doorway, and maybe we'll claim to have had transdimensional experiences there, and many Vandenakin-like anthropologists believe that extraterrestrials built this as one of the many portals that were built all over the world. I've gone there twice hoping to have a transdimensional experience. I felt vibes, and I don't think it was my imagination. I think there's some real intense energies here. I didn't get transported to another dimension, unfortunately. But it's there for the public. There's tours that have led to it, and you can go on your own if you want to do a hike from Puno. And as with many of the ruins in Peru, there's something else. I mean, the Nazca lines weren't built to be seen by llama skins, hot air balloons, no matter what they say on the tours. The sexy woman, these huge rocks that get stronger whenever there's an earthquake, weren't moved by the Incas on stones with slaves. I believe, having been down there a lot and having a certain amount of visions, there was a lot of interdimensional and interplanetary interactions between the pre-Inca and beings from other. And I think this doorway is an example of it. And the talk that everybody does of portals all over, there are those, and I might be one of them, who believe that part of the wars in Iraq and Iran and Afghanistan was about finding portals and lost knowledge of those times. That there's secret government agencies, and not to get into deep two conspiracies, but and ultra rich that want to be able to travel to other dimensions, and the technology seems to have been left behind.
Well, in Artie Six Killer Clark, one of the stories that she shares from somebody, I believe it was over Afghanistan or Iraq, a service person, and he encountered in a cave some ultra or extra or interdimensionals, extraterrestrials, and they said that they could help him come back here. And if, you know, because they didn't think he was safe where he was. Well, he agreed, but he said that wouldn't work because he was in the service, and that would be considered, you know.
that would
create more problems.
Right.
but she has two or three stories that talk about this kind of thing, but she did not disclose the locations for good reason. But it was like these people who know about them, they know they're there. And it's just a matter of if you're in the right place at the right time, you might accidentally walk through one.
If you have a open mind and an imagination of sorts, you can see that advanced races, advanced beings, would set up something beyond warp speed of Star Trek that would take you through to where you want to be in the universe.
Yeah. Bruce Gernon, I just talked with him about his experience in the Bermuda Triangle, and he's saying he believes he flew through a wormhole. He's trying to get the word out that this exists, especially for pilots who experience these electronic fog issues,
right.
That there's more
right.
to that electronic fog that could create an interdimensional wormhole, and then, you know, some people can get lost in it, and it doesn't end well, of course.
we're finding so many things out. I mean, for a while, they thought that civilization only went back 1, 2, maybe 3,000 years. The Egyptians might have had something earlier, but now we're finding that 6,000, 8,000 years ago, there were advanced civilizations, Kopeteke, and everything is just, we don't have a clue, and what we've thought we knew was scratching the surface of what has existed before. One of my favorite stories from my book, Travel Tales from Unknown Realities, is one time I was in the Amazon, and I used to seek out shamans with recommendations. There's one down here, one over there, and I met this shaman, and I was trying to get him to tell me some of his magic, and he told me, you want a story, I'll tell you a story. A UFO crashed in the Amazon not far from here. And I said, really, do you have any of the ruins? And this is the Amazon. Everything rots. No. But, you know, my apprentice and I went out and we found a body. And I was like, really, did you save it? And again, he said, this is the Amazon. Everything rots. I thought, oh, yeah, he's telling the gringo a good story. And then he said, but... You know, we thought, wow, how to experience this? So we boiled up the body, and I drank it for a week.
Oh.
And then I went out, and if my apprentice hadn't been here, I'm sure I would have killed myself because I lost all sense of sanity. And all my senses got scrambled, and I tasted colors, and I smelled sounds, and on and on and on. He said, this lasted for over a month. And then because my apprentice made sure I stayed alive, it slowly wore down, but I've never been right since.
Wow.
And yeah, that's just some crazy shaman in the Amazon having drank the soup of a dead alien. Imagine what their DNA is like. Imagine what their experiences are like, and what they've left here on Earth for us.
There's another, this is a tease for another interview, somebody who did walk through and into a portal, a vortex, whatever, however you want to term it, and came back and is going to talk about the entities that greeted him and a friend.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah. And when they returned, they both came back in different locations and then met at a common space, figuring out, oh my gosh, now what? The thing is, you've had these extraordinary experiences, and with Carlos Castaneda, with other, this is a lot of influence for expanding your awareness and opening your mind and saying what we don't know is even larger than what we do know. We have so much to learn.
I like to think of reality as an onion. You know, and we're living in this little slice we call the material world, and it's so many other layers to exist in. I mean, I've been blessed from an early age to get a taste of more occult, metaphysical, and otherworldly experiences than a lot of people. But still, I've only cracked the surface of the onion. There's so much, so much more.
Well, a previous interview I did is in the archives, and it's there, and it talks a little bit about the experience you had with Phineas Goodhue.
Phineas was definitely a key character in my development. My father was a funeral director, and I grew up. He bought a farm surrounded by cemeteries, and I grew up, playing around the funeral home and helping out in the funeral home as I got older. And as in the wintertime, it was north of Boston in New England. They used backhoes to dig up the ground to be able to put the caskets in, and they often catch old caskets and spread the bones all over the snow. Now, helping my father as a teenager, I just thought this was the coolest thing. I knew nobody I knew had a collection of human bones. So I had this large aquarium my brother had given me, and I started going back after the funerals and picking up bones and bringing them home and putting them into the aquarium. I thought it was pretty cool until I started having terrible nightmares. It was like hurricanes. People were screaming at me. People were speaking in other languages. I couldn't sleep. I thought I was going crazy. I told my parents I was sick. I couldn't go to school. And it just went on and on. And then I had, I asked, just make it clear to me. Tell me what's going on. And in a dream one night appeared to me this fellow dressed in turn of the century 1800 garb, and he said, "I'm Phineas Goodhue, and I've been chosen to speak for the bones," and in the dream. And at that point, I wasn't adept at astral traveling or lucid dreaming, but in the dream, I somehow said, "Oh, okay, what do I do?" And he said, "You've taken the bones from their sacred ground. They can't go on with their afterlife journey. You need to return them to sacred ground." And I said, "Well, what if I don't?" He said, "Well, they'll drive you crazy, and there's no hope for you." And I said, "Well, what do I get if I do?" And he said, "What do you want?" And in the dream, I said, I want to know the secrets and the mysteries of life. And he hesitated for a moment, and he said, "Okay, it's a deal. Return the bones." The next morning, I got up and I took a burlap bag, because we had horses, so we had feed bags, and I filled it up with the bones, and I went to the back of one of the cemeteries and dug a deep hole while my family was at church. It was a Sunday morning, and I buried the bones and covered them over and said, "Okay, Phineas, I did my part." And I swear, Phineas has all my life been around to nudge me this way and send me down this alley for amazing experiences. One day, not too many weeks after that, I was exploring some of the old tombstones in one of the cemeteries, because some of them were extremely old. And sure enough, one of them had a poem on it. It said, "Stop, my friends, as you pass by. As you are now, so once was I. As I am now, so you must be. Prepare for death and follow me." And the name on the tombstone was Phineas Goodhue. And I get chills just retelling the story. My wife, Sophia, who is a Nordic witch and an amazing person, and I lived in a place in Virginia that was just idyllic. It was a treehouse cabin on the end of a dirt road, surrounded by an amazing garden with a brook, and we had a ton of magical experiences there. As we were coming to an end of our living in there, I had a dream, and in that, many magical creatures we had touched came back and celebrated our leaving what we called Magic Land, and Phineas was among them, and he said, "You're going to need me now that you're leaving." And I think he's been here in New Orleans, kind of introducing me to people along the way.
That's what's extraordinary, the experiences you're having now. But first, there's one more when you were younger, a UFO encounter.
Yeah, and like Phineas, and then there was a couple of other things that happened in my youth that I think kind of put me on this track. To this day, I'm not quite clear about it all, but I know what I remember happening. I used to, when I was younger, I was blessed to have a pony of my own, and my dog, who basically raised me, a Cocker Spaniel named Corky. And when I would come home from school in the spring or fall, I would saddle up my pony, and the three of us would go off through the woods. And out in the woods, it was this deserted field, had once grown corn or something back before they had refrigerated trains and airplanes. And we used to go there, and my dog would chase rabbits, and my horse would graze, and I'd sit on his back and just stare at the clouds. And one day I was staring at the clouds, and there was a silver dot off on the horizon. And as I watched it, it grew bigger, and it turned into this sort of silver football that was floating over me. And I felt almost frozen, and I kept staring at it, and it got right over me. And then I woke up. And it was dark, and my horse was skitty, and the dog was barking, and I didn't know what the heck to think. So I took the pony, and we headed home, because the rule was I could go as far as I wanted, anywhere I wanted, as long as I was home by dark, but I had broken the rule. When I got home, after making my excuses, I went to my bedroom, and there was a bump on my left calf. And years later, I had it looked at, and they said it was just flesh that had kind of grown in a circle there. But the fact that it appeared one afternoon after this experience always made me wonder. And it's still there to this day, all these decades later. I kind of think that I was abducted, and the UFOs have, or the extraterrestrials have affected my life, adding to all these amazing experiences that I've always had.
There's a couple of people I've talked to. Terry Lovelace is one, and he has an implant, and he didn't realize it was there until he was jogging, was having some pain, and then had it looked at, and then found this little thing. And he sent me a picture of the x-ray that they took. Yep. So he has a story along with that we're not going to go into, but there's somebody else who said recently, and this is the person who went into the portal and came back, they said before he left, let's mark him. And he right. came back with a glow, a dot that glowed, that eventually quit glowing. But I think what you're describing, whether it's an implant or not, was a mark, intentional.
Yeah, we do it to sheep and horses and cows.
Uh-huh.
Why wouldn't advanced races that visit Earth do it to us?
Oh, my guess is they have a difficult time telling us apart.
Us apart, yeah. I'm like a stupid, fleshy animals running around.
Well, it's, you hate to think of us like that, but that it would be a reason to be marked so we could be tracked. And this one's friendly, this one not so much.
This one's doing some things we want him to do that will move things along.
Different kind of marks mean different things. Implants versus,
exactly.
A tag.
In different ways.
Yeah. Yep. So, the thing I find fascinating too, have you ever had a Bigfoot encounter?
Well.
Yes.
I was camping near Mount Shasta with my ex-wife. We used to backpack a lot. And one night, we had gone way, way away. It was early winter. And so there was snow on the ground, just up to, not up to your knee, just up to your calf. And we had a fire, and then we went to bed, and there was this amazing howling. I had never heard such howling. I got out and looked around, and I couldn't see anything. The next morning, there were these big footprints in the snow, and I followed them as far as I can, and then they just disappeared. Mm. We stayed another two nights hoping that we'd get more experiences, but that was as close as I've gotten to Bigfoot.
See, that's what people find so fascinating is one minute they're there, and the next minute, no trace. And I think it's because they're interdimensional.
Oh, I definitely feel that. They, the Loch Ness, the little people, if you will, there's a lot of extraterrestrial beings. They move to other dimensions, definitely the fifth dimension, and they can come and they can play and they can do, and then they can go back just at the snap of a finger, so that they can not be caught, but they can be seen.
There are several accounts on YouTube. There's somebody who's tracking Lake of the Ozarks and experiences there. And that's where I go. Before I went to Arkansas, my first encounter where I was like, oh my gosh, mind opened. And then this last weekend, just because I'd like to go and get away from it all. And this is a quiet space I know about. The telepathic connect was there. And it was the instruction was that our minds are so full of chatter, of talk. And right. I was getting that impression and being told, you know, your mind is so full. How do you tell who's really talking? And that's right. The question is, we have this flotsam and jetsam. And what the instruction was, it was quiet mind, open heart. If you want these kinds of experiences, or especially with Sasquatch, I believe also with other interdimensionals and with afterlife. Yes. Of afterlife, yes. Same thing. Quiet mind, open heart. You get the good experiences. The other kind of stuff, the negative stuff, isn't attracted to that. The open heart thing.
I so believe that. When I'm busy running a business or doing therapy with children, I got too much going on. If I can take time, if I can center myself, if I can be focused. One time I was blessed to be in Morocco, and I signed up for a camel caravan across part of the Sierra for a week, because I had always wanted to do something like that. And it was great. The local people, set up our tents and cooked us food and told us stories at night. But about the fifth day, it was getting pretty tedious. You're riding on a camel all day, the sand's blowing in your face. And then I saw this guy riding beside me on a camel who I hadn't seen in the caravan. And I said, excuse me, where'd you come from? And he said, well, I'm a genie. And I said, oh, come on, what is this? He said, you don't believe me. I said, I can make you a camel, throw you right now. I said, no, you don't have to do that. And then right away, there was a Japanese girl on the caravan. Her camel threw her. So we had to stop, and they rounded up her camel, and they gave her one of the guide's camels. But before we went forward, the genie was still there. Nobody else seemed to see him. And he said, there, on the ground, look. And there was this blue kind of stone. He said, pick that up, and at the end of the day, give it to the guy leading the tour, and see what happens. You'll know I was real. And he went on for about, I'd say, 2-3 hours, telling me stories about life before Muhammad in the deserts, and how Muhammad had declared war on the genies, and how they had to escape to the deserts, but they were still there. And at the end of the day, I gave the rock to the fellow who was leading the tour, and he said, "Where did you get this? Nobody finds these. He said, they're really dangerous. Throw it in the fire and make a wish." And you'll get it, and we'll all be blessed for the rest of the trip. So I did, and my father had served in North Africa during World War II, so I made a wish to get in contact with my father. And then when I went to Casablanca, where he had spent his last days in Africa, I swear his ghost talked to me for a whole evening, leading me through Casablanca.
Wow. Yeah. Okay, so the genie was real.
I think so.
Yeah. Yeah. They have stories about the djinn, and you know,
right.
Don't call them. Don't call them. Let them call you, and then be very, very careful and respectful.
And the reason I said it is because I was so tranced out with the winds blowing the sand in my face, riding hour after hour on the camel, that I was open to having that experience.
Yeah. 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 As like, okay, how do you top that? For one thing, trying to tell anybody about that, the thing that does ground it is the fact that you gave it to the guide and he's like, oh my gosh. And then he told you what you could do.
Exactly. Yeah. And it was a great caravan. I couldn't ask for a better one. And then to have the experience of having my father guide me around. No, go to this restaurant if they're still open. They used to have the best, and it mentioned some Moroccan dish. And sure enough, I was stuffed by the end of the evening.
Well, we mentioned your other, the one book, and there's two other, Secrets of the Ancient Incas, A Modern Approach to Ancient Ritual and Practice, and the other one, Secrets of the Amazon Shamans, Healing Traditions from South America. Did that involve ayahuasca?
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, you can't do shaman. You can't really, and I am prejudiced, do shamanic ritual without doing alternating substances, San Pedro cactus, ayahuasca, Jimson weed, brown dust that they make and blow up your nose and blows off the top of your head. I guess that's one of my favorite stories there. I was in this isolated, I think it was one of the northern Ghana's, French Guiana, and I was out in the Amazon, and I got to this tribe, and they said, well, you're welcome, but we do a ritual in the evening. All men have to do it. And they had a pipe, a long pipe, and they blew this brown smoke up my nose, and not smoke, but dust, and I fell back and almost lost consciousness. And when I got up, I was like, okay, good, that's over with. And then they said, oh, two more times.
That was the intro.
Exactly. And the third time, the top of my head came off, and little brown men danced around it and sang and played the song I'd never heard before, that was just so amazing. And I woke up in my hammock the next morning, and when I went back to the leader of the ceremony, I said, what happened? He said, what were those little, what happened? My head came up high, I had a little brown man. He said, that was the song of your life. That was the song of your soul. When you are in need going forward, remember the song. And for months afterwards, I was running Magical Blend magazine at the time, and it was pretty stressful. I would stop and just go into a meditative state, and these little brown men would come and dance and sing the song to me, and it was just such a gift.
Wow, that sounds like the story of the little people. Similar.
Yeah. Well, they're everywhere. In the book, I mentioned that my wife and I spent time in Mexico, and I spent quite a bit, but we were living on the beach of Tijuana, which is very safe, contrary to popular belief. I was working in San Diego and going across and back, and my wife and I, when we first got together, she had studied Seda, which is a Nordic witch's occult tradition. I had studied with the shamans and done Magical Blend magazine, so all sorts of occult and New Age stuff. And it took us a while to kind of get our magic systems together. But by the time we got to Tijuana, we had them pretty down. But I still was drinking quite a bit. I don't drink hardly at all now. But then the Tijuana was cheap and good. And when you drink a lot, you have a few heated discussions late at night. One morning after a heated discussion, I went into the bathroom feeling quite hungover, Tijuana and tequila. A little door opened in the bottom of the floor in the bathroom. Out danced these little people, sort of Mexican in image, but sort of feeling very oceanic, and they did this play of me and my now wife arguing, and they made fun of us, and it was hilarious. I laughed at myself, and then they explained to me that they were ancient beings who had always lived on that shore, and that they always found some of the more interesting people that were staying and came and entertained them while they were there, and taught them that this gave their lives, their existence meaning. And they came and visited me and did plays for me often in the bathroom while we were staying at Tijuana. And they were most hilarious beings, and they just apparently, according to them, were ageless and lived there and could come and go as they pleased.
Well, you've met some immortals.
I have.
Okay.
Or one, anyway. When I was young, I knew this guy who was, we were talking about being centered and spiritual. He was extremely. And another friend and I would go and visit him just to get what's going on in the spiritual realms, because I wasn't quite as aware or experienced as I am now. One time we went to visit him, and he said, well, I've got this message. This woman wants us to go visit her. And we were like, you got this message? What are you talking about? But yeah, we jumped in the car and we drove long ways. And then eventually we got to, as with all good movies, to this dirt road and went down the dirt road. And at the end, there was this cottage. And when we knocked on the door, this very exotic woman came to the door and she invited us in. And she said, I've been expecting you. And she gave us this tea, and we sat and drank the tea. I'm not sure what was in the tea. She started touching our foreheads and we like sort of blended together. So I knew her story and I knew my friends better than I ever had. And she, from there, I got that she was this ancient being who had chosen long ago to stay incarnate and to help guide humanity towards where we're supposed to go. She told me and my friends that we had a role to play, and that's why she had called me, because by meeting her, she could adjust our energies and it was going to help us play the role that we were meant to play. And this went on for a while, and I vaguely remember driving home. I didn't drive, but I vaguely remember getting home, and the next morning I called up my friend who went with me, and he said, no, nothing happened. You know, we had some tea and we drove home. And then I called up the spiritual guy and he said, oh, you shouldn't have remembered anything. Look, I'm moving to Florida now. So you'll never see me again. Just don't try to tell our other friend, because he's not supposed to know and he won't remember. But I did. I told my other friend, and we tried to drive back and find the house. We think we found the road, but when we got there, we couldn't find the house.
That's the kind of story that movies are made from. You're right. Yeah. It's all good movies.
Yeah.
The house at the end of the road.
Really? And as you know, Wendy, because we've talked before, my life has kind of overflowed with those magical moments.
Well, which is really funny. The name of the magazine was Magical Blend, and that's your life. That's the title of your life, Magical Blend.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
Yeah.
As silly as it sounds, I'm not sure I put it together that way, but you're right. It works.
Well, and the thing is, there's good and there's bad when you're involved with magic, and you seem to be able to surf it without a whole lot of fallout.
Well, you know, that'd be nice, but I am human. As I said, I had a wife for almost 30 years, and that didn't work out towards the end. And I had Magical Blend magazine, and when the financial downturn came, that didn't work out well. And I didn't know what my name was if I wasn't the publisher of Magical Blend. I tend to land, all my friends know, I land on my feet. And I recover quick, but to do real magic, you have to be willing to take risks, and to live magically, you have to be able to say, you know, all right, we'll put it all on number 9. And when you do that, boy, you really win. I mean, Magical Blend magazine started in my living room in San Francisco with a bunch of volunteers, and at the end of 27 years, it was distributed in 33 countries and all states, and sold over 100,000 copies every month. And then it went away. I've been luckier and blessed than most. And I've had a couple of dark nights of the soul.
Well, I know that's how my introduction to you, I bought Magical Blend magazine. I thought it was the best magazine. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, if that was available again, it was ahead of its time. It was outstanding because of the interviews, the content, and everything. There was an authenticity about it. It wasn't just somebody who kicked tires writing, oh, here's the latest fad article of the month, I'll write something about it. It was people who lived it. And that's what you're doing, living it.
Thank you. I was blessed to, in my multiple changings of life, I ended up doing public relations for the Monroe Institute, which teaches all kinds of things, lucid dreaming, astral traveling, and for a year in Virginia. And I had an office in the back where I did my work, and it was so nice because because people would fly in from all over the world. And because my name was on the masthead, so to speak, they would find my office and come and testify about how Magical Blend had changed their lives. And it was so great. When I left that, my wife and I formed a magazine in Virginia, or took over a magazine in Virginia, that was similar but different. And Virginia is very different than California. And the times have changed. But we had a great go of it for 8 years until COVID came in and knocked the hell out of our advertisers. But in Virginia, there were churches that were holding it up and saying we were the devil's tool and people should pray that bad things happen to us.
Oh.
Because you're in the Bible Belt, and a lot of people waited for it every month, and it was a great experience. I think we did touch a lot of lives, but on the other hand, there are a lot of people that wish us ill.
With the Monroe Institute there, you would think there'd be a little bit more of an open mind.
Robert Monroe bought the land for the Monroe Institute because it was a good deal, because there was no businesses in that county. It's people fly in from all over the world.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
The county has not gotten
changed.
I think they're the third biggest business in the county to this day.
Okay. Yeah, well, I know they've expanded and they do some amazing things.
They've done good. It was an honor to work there, and I met so many amazing people, and it's expensive, but the people that can afford it really get their lives touched. I was really lucky. I've worked a lot with emotionally disturbed and troubled youth. I had worked with one fellow in Northern California who had found his father died of a drug overdose, and his mother was in prison, and he had a rough go of it. We kind of bonded as I worked with him, and he got older. When I left California, we stayed in touch, and I was able to convince the director to give him a scholarship to the Monroe Institute. And he was going on a good path at that point. Mm-hmm. But boy, did that change his whole existence for this troubled youth to get a free week of intense spiritual training with a bunch of other fascinating people from all over the world. It's good stuff.
True Stories, Travel Tales from Unknown Realities with Michael Peter Langevin.
I've talked with both Nancy McMonagle and Joe
right.
McMonagle. And
yeah.
Joe,
yeah,
remote viewer
people.
For the Army. With your experiences with Joe, what was that like?
Oh, Joe's a storyteller that puts me to shame. I have a hard time getting an edge word wise when I'm sitting with Joe. But they're fascinating stories. He's had an amazing life, and he's gone places remote viewing and seen things remote viewing that few have. I mean, Ingo Swann, in my book, is one of the most amazing of the remote viewers of the early set, but Joe worked with him, and Joe is a little gruffer, but he has so many stories, and you know, he's got the essence from all this that he just kind of floats through life as a normal guy if you see him in the supermarket.
Well, he's a super psychic, and that's what they said about remote viewing, that, you know, it was too woo-woo to have the name of clairvoyance or anything like that. So remote viewing was a lot more of a scientific, conservative title, name, designation, so they could use it without people, I guess, going out it's saying
right.
It's the thing
the military
devil.
Really, the military really came up with the term because they wanted to compete with Russia, and they did amazing things. And then once they took the cat out of the box, it ran, and it's people can learn to remote view. I mean, what's wonderful in this day and age is there's videos on YouTube that can teach you how to remote view. But then someone like Joe McMonagle is teaching classes periodically at the Monroe Institute to get a firsthand experience. And people can go and learn, and they can learn on their own to go to the past, to go to other dimensions, to go across. You can do it astral traveling. You can do it in lucid dreams, or you can do a remote viewing. And a lot of, as the Monroe Institute has tried to coach their stuff in more digestible terms and approaches, it's easier to accept.
Well, there's a book coming out from Skip Atwater, who was part
Skip's great.
He's the one who pretty much set that program up and running and connected with Joe and Ingo and Pat Price. What he's got, the book 8200, Project 8200, is the story of what Pat Price did when he remote viewed what on his own, just out of the blue, extra time, and was curious if there were alien bases on Earth. So he came in with his thing and said, this is what I found. There are four alien bases here. And they're thinking, oh, yeah, right. Well, it turns out they were able to validate one when they called, I think it was New Zealand, and said, do you know anything about this particular place? Oh, yeah, the one where the UFOs fly. Okay, so there. That's the story. I'm going to interview. I've got a couple of interviews set up about that. But see, you also live these kinds of experiences, and it's just like, you know, no big deal. Like when we're talking about the shamanic experiences, and your background suggests that you're also, even though you say there's some risk involved, comfortable with taking the risk.
Oh, I expect it at this point in my life. I've lived that way, and they come to me without asking. I kind of have to work to turn them off. And I do. And I think it's available to everyone, Wendy. It's just that we're all, as we said earlier, there's too much chatter. We're all so caught up in our jobs and the next nice car and the nicer apartment or house and competing with the Joneses. And we don't make the choice to tune in to the spiritual and the otherworldly. But I think people who choose more now than ever, and I think more people are becoming aware and raising their consciousness to have these experiences and to seek out techniques and tools and people to help them to do it.
Well, to me, it seems like we're at a tipping point where more and more people are not only having the experience, they're talking about it, which has been shunned and you know, you were ostracized or shamed into silence because you weren't normal if you had an experience like this.
When I started Magical Blend back in the 70s, people said, this is wrong. This is a mistake. People aren't supposed to know this information. And now, things that were edgy then are being used in therapy, are being taught in classrooms, are online. Yeah, it's so opening up. And I think it's unstoppable. We're going to see more and more people having metaphysical, spiritual, and enlightened experiences as time goes on. Here in New Orleans, magic is a way of life. It has that mystique all over the world, so people come for it. But there's voodoo practitioners, tarot readers and psychics and ghost talkers. I some of my kids that I see in therapy say things like, oh, voodoo? Yeah, my grandmother's teaching me. Oh, yeah, we had a ceremony this weekend with the family. You wouldn't even think of that in other times.
Well, the other thing, too, is that for them, that's a practical issue of knowing, because if you're not conversant in that language and some of the little things that go along with that, you can get sidelined or waylaid, and you've experienced that.
I have. When I first got here, I'm almost embarrassed to say, but, you know, we all do what we got to do to do. And when I first got here, I couldn't get a good paying job in therapy. So I took a job in a restaurant and on Bourbon Street, because you can always get a job on Bourbon Street. And it's a great experience to see the zoo of tourists late till 3 a.m. But the assistant manager didn't like me. I wasn't a bad worker, but she just took a dislike to me. And I started breaking out in rashes and getting all kinds of sicknesses. And I finally called this psychic I knew and said, something's wrong. Something's definitely wrong. And she said, oh, there's somebody in your life who doesn't like you in a big way and is putting voodoo curses on you. And I knew exactly who it was right away. So I gave my resignation and got a better paying job. But it's easy to walk into a pit of snakes if you're not careful.
Well, and that's dark magic. So it carries its own issues.
Oh, no question about it. I mean, the wonderful thing about voodoo here and in Haiti, where I visited before the gangs took over, is that the true voodoo practitioners believe that what goes around comes around. They say it differently, but so that if you put out bad curses, if you put out negative energies, they come back and hit you or your loved ones. So they know better than to do that. But there are those who study the dark side, and they do exist, and it is something you have to work out for. I had to protect my children when we were doing Magical Blend from terrible negative curses sent at me and would bounce off to them if I hadn't been extremely careful because people didn't like what I had decided. I didn't want to put them on the cover or feature them in the magazine, and they were a powerful sorcerer with a vengeance.
See, that's what is absolutely mind-boggling, that this stuff is... It exists, for one thing, on such a level that people, they can be so proficient at it and still blend in.
Well, that's it. And there's so many movies and TV shows now, Doctor Strange, Harry Potter, Merlin, Gandalf, that people are starting to realize that it does exist and always has existed. And the powers that be, we'll call them, have tried really hard to convince people that when you hear your grandmother's voice, you're overacting, you're going crazy. Or when you know who's going to call on the phone, it's just a coincidence. But those things are just the tip of the iceberg that we're all capable of. And if people say, yes, I believe it and I want more of it, I mean, it's belief, desire, and expectancy. If people believe it and they desire to have it in their lives and then they expect it to happen, I've seen people go from being used car salesmen to living a magical life because they made the switch.
That's one to remember. Belief, desire, and expectancy. Are you teaching anywhere?
At this moment, I'm not. I have my books out, and we're talking to some people about possibly starting a magazine here, but I'm not sure yet, so I probably shouldn't say that. I think I have a class or two I've done on Peruvian shamanism online, but I'm not teaching any classes right at this moment.
Didn't you, for a while, you were doing the cocoa, was it ceremonies?
Cocoa readings, yes. I was doing cocoa readings, and I'm still... willing to, if someone's interested, coca readings, and then being in New Orleans, I was doing bone, I was throwing the bones for people. As is above, so is below. Everything is written around us. There's symbolism everywhere. Tea leaves, coca leaves, bones. If thrown and your intuition and psychic abilities are open, you can see the patterns that unfold or are unfolding or about to unfold in people's lives.
What I thought was interesting, my own guidance, they said throw matches, and it was because it didn't have any dogma, anything else associated with it. And so I got a designated a little group. One was the signature, the other one was the past, and the other was the future. So different colors of matchsticks to represent that, and then have the person drop the matches and read them. And it was the one that I had never seen anybody do this. I'm sure it may have been done somewhere, but that was the guidance I got. And the first reading I gave to somebody, he said, "How did you know?" Well, I didn't. I didn't, but the matches knew.
Right. No. The matches gave the pattern, and your intuition was open.
Yeah.
And you spoke what was coming through. And again, anyone can do it. And that you see a lot more people using a lot of different tarot decks now or divination decks than ever before. I mean, there's so many. It's only the opening of the intuition that will allow. I mean, your creativity is wonderful and should be saluted. And people can do that kind of thing where if you pick a book off a shelf and say, "I want guidance," and just randomly open it, usually you'll find a paragraph on the first page that says what you need to hear.
The words. There was somebody, I can't remember, someone had, there were images where they had books that were chosen remote viewing and go there's this book here, it'll be in such and such a library, blah, blah, go get it, and then open to such a page. It might have been even Leslie Kane. But when I saw that, the page that was written was so absolute spot on with what was happening now, and it had nothing to do with now. And it gets me into that time thing where certain things are supposed to unfold at a given time, and then we deal with it. Like, everybody wants disclosure. It's already happening. This is what is disclosure. It's the reality that this is going on all around us and has been for quite some time. We're just now able to contemplate the possibility that it's real and not smart gas.
You and I know that because we've had experiences and we've talked to so many people, but mostly varying degrees is what people are ready to hear or willing to hear in this life.
Yeah.
And yeah, it is. I mean, we know there's extraterrestrials about and extra dimensional beings about, and that they've been affecting humanity throughout the ages, and that there's ancient mysteries that we're only starting to unfold. I mean, they just figured out that there was huge civilizations that exist in the Amazon before the Europeans got there. And we didn't think there was anything but jungle there forever. I mean, there's so many things that have existed and do exist that we can be privy to if we decide to open our hearts and minds to look for them.
Well, I think it's interesting, too. A lot of people, as you're talking about, are doing that. There's a guy who is incredibly excited about his discoveries right now in the Amazon, where he's going and he's identifying the landscape and the vegetation and taking you on a tour of this pyramid that he's found, and he's just so excited. This is it. This is where it lays out, and here's the temple, and here's this, and he just goes back and the diagram of what he has found, and it's all under vegetation, but it's there. And those kinds of things, we are learning to, I think, listen to guidance or listen to help that says you are more than your physical body, Robert Monroe. You have abilities you have yet to tap into. And that is also Ingo Swann saying it's right here, right now.
And the Gnostic Gospels that were left out of the Bible say clearly we are all can do the things Christ did and more. We are all God beings.
Yes.
We just need to accept that and embrace it and live more that way if we choose to.
There's a lot going on with you in New Orleans, and I think right place, right time, because you're in a community that is saturated with, however, you know, metaphysical magic, that there might be more energy, creative energy, to help initiate something. What do you think?
I've come to, having lived here now for a little over 2 years, I think ley lines actually cross over New Orleans, and that explains a lot of its history and a lot of its energies, so that it brings in the as your listeners probably know, ley lines are the energy flows of the planet, sort of like our veins and arteries. And when they cross, like in Jerusalem, many spiritual things happen. And I think some of them cross here, and that explains a lot of what's going on. And yes, I mean, we'll go out to a jazz club and bump into someone and have a conversation about magic or voodoo or spirituality. And it's wonderful to have that kind of thing available.
I wish there was a couple who had an experience. I interviewed them maybe 4, 5, 6 years ago, abducted in New Orleans. And they had an encounter that they really couldn't explain, that was completely beyond the pale. And I have not been able to connect with them since. But it indicated that there may be a portal or two there.
I wouldn't be at all surprised. I mean, people don't have to believe me. I don't really care. But there's a vampire community here that's very strong and vibrant. I almost became a vampire soon after getting here, and was spending time with this group once a month until it came time to make the decision. And then before I could make my decision, they decided I was much too much of a Boy Scout sort of character to become a vampire. So I was rejected to the opportunity if I wanted it or not. But there, it's not hard even for tourists that are here for a week to find hot spots where vampires exist. And I think in the world, there's energy vampires, there's classic vampires, there's sexual vampires, and a few others. And I think many of the different kinds exist here in New Orleans.
I'm hoping Phineas Goodhue was the one saying, you don't want him? Nope, nope, nope. He's.
I think he probably was. It's a good time. It is, I should be dead 1,000 times over. One time I went to a shaman in northern Peru and was really excited. I knew it was a chance because they had been dark magicians up there, but I had so many good experiences. I thought I was bulletproof. He got me drunk. He told me some pretty amazing things, but then he got me drunk and I passed out. I was beat up and passed out, and I woke up naked, tied to a tree. Not too far, fortunately, from a road. And I realized, okay, if I yell loud enough, someone's going to stop. And sure enough, someone stopped and took me to Cajamarca, which from there I could get to help. But it's...
Yeah, but they told you. They told you. You're lucky. You're one of the lucky ones.
That's it. And I think Phineas probably was the one that made him choose that tree, you know? I think he's sort of been my guardian angel, one of my guardian angels. I must have a lot of them.
Yeah, because I remember that story that they told you were lucky you lived because a lot of them didn't.
Right. Yeah. That's exactly what he said. Exactly. No, one time years ago, I was traveling in Europe and I met this woman and she invited me to her home village, and I was very excited to see rural Transylvania.
That's a name.
And we got there and we sat up drinking and I went to my bed and she went to hers. I think I was a young man, a little disappointed, but that's the way it went. And I heard her screeching in the middle of the night. And I jumped out of bed and ran down and said, "Well, what's going on? What's going on?" She said, "They were here. The old ones were here. You have to leave first thing in the morning. Your energies are drawing them towards us. We'll both be dead before two days go by." So granted, I got on a bus next day and left Transylvania, but I think I brushed with some of the old vamp then.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's one not to test.
I'm brave.
Uh-huh. Yeah, but not.
Sometimes foolhardy, but no. When I go down the wrong alley and I start hearing noises, I go, "Okay, I've been beat up on too many dark alleys. Gonna leave this one."
I think there's a brave, there's foolhardy, and there's stupid. Okay.
Yeah.
And stupid does
and
not
I've
work.
Been all three.
Well, I know the guidance I got one time was they'll forgive ignorance when you don't know something. But when you have been told, do not
then
do
you
this.
Do it. They just say, "Don't be a dunderhead," and they smack you.
That's stupid. Yeah.
It's really true. I mentioned my wife, Sophia, earlier. She's written a couple of books in Swedish on goddesses and the runes. And when we were in that beautiful place in Virginia, we would finish working and turn off all electronics and sit on the porch because it overlooked the beautiful garden and the stream and share a few glasses of wine and we'd take turns because Seda is really a little bit like voodoo possession, but different. Mm-hmm. And you can bring in entities to get experiences and hopefully knowledge and maybe even wisdom. Mm-hmm. And we would do that and sometimes they were pretty mundane, but other times it'd be a relative that we had no knowledge of. My mother's father was an Irish bartender and his great grandfather was a farmer and a fisherman in Ireland, and I think he came through one time. And other times it'd be like other dimensional beings. And I put in the book a few of these, and one of them, I was going under, and my wife said, "You're changing. Are you like becoming a mountain?" And I said, I don't know. I feel really like a rock. And then this voice came through me and we called him Rock Lip. And he was sort of this armadillo being from another dimension who lived on sort of a floating island in the ethers and would go on these ribbon-like trails to other islands to help other beings, teaching and healing, and then come back to his island. Whenever he came back to his island, there were always these like green bat-like beings he had to chase off who had pooed all over the place. and he said, I'm not sure why I came through, but I felt your energies and I wanted to experience your existence. And then eventually he faded and we had the memories and the story of this healer teacher from another dimension.
See, that's what's fascinating. And channeling is like that. My experience with channeling, yeah. Same thing. You can get all these characters, anybody you want to mention, you can figure out how to connect with or they can tap into you. And it's a matter of getting boundaries. And like you said, with that system that you're using, you do have a boundary. So just willy-nilly doing that and falling for the first one that you meet doing whatever it's Ouija board or channeling, or you have to remember there's an agenda and be proactive and conscious of your own energy of what you are inviting so that you can have, go ahead.
When we were in Tijuana, we were swimming in the ocean a lot. It was lovely. And one day my wife came out and she said, I feel strange. And I said, well, what's going on? And we got that some entity had attached itself to her.
Yeah.
So we went back to our apartment and we did a ritual to speak to the entity, and it had been this woman who had drowned, and her spirit had been floating in the ocean for a long time, and she wanted to be set free, but she was so weakened by having floated in the ocean for so long that she just didn't have the energy, and even if we had set her free, she would have just dissipated. So she asked if she could be attached to my wife for a while. Well, that seemed, my wife was okay with that until I couldn't get her out of the ocean after a while. She just was swimming all the time, and we were eating an awful lot of fish. I said, okay, we got to do something. So we basically called up the entity and told her she had to leave, and she was strong enough and left. But it's those kind of things that you have to be careful of.
Yes, and it's so innocent, you don't really know that there could be a downside.
Right. No, you and... Yeah, what do they say? The devil has a silver tongue. entities that usually have an agenda and usually want something, and it can be innocent and it can benefit you too. But you have to, with all things spiritual and psychic readers or what have you, you have to have discretion and boundaries. Because I've seen too many people that they run out and they get spiritual and they join the first cult, or they become a devout astrologer that nothing else matters but astrology. And it's like, no, just because you got a new religion doesn't mean it's the one. And you have to have some discretion. Just because this guy told you some things about your grandmother doesn't mean you have to give him your car and home. You have to have discretion and boundaries.
I didn't believe in possession until it happened to me. And we lived in a house. The guy before was suicide. And I woke up and it was kind of, ooh, and I realized, boy, I sound like a ghost. And that was him trying, and all it was he was trying to get my attention. Several paranormal things had happened leading up to that. One was that I was thought I forgot how to breathe. I would wake up choking. And that was before he figured out how to make noise. Or my finger would be pushed down. I would hear chimes. The cat was being messed with. Things were being moved. But it took me a while to figure out how I could help him move forward because I didn't know I could do it. So I had to learn a lot of different things. And honestly, it took about 2 or 3 years before I realized that he was still attached, still tagging along, and really, really mad, super mad, because I was so dumb.
Well,
I was the only one who could connect to him, and I wasn't helping him move. And when I got his people to come collect him, they were really nice, and he was still mad. And he already had that in him. But it was just a learning experience and a learning curve, because there were more paranormal. We moved, and there were paranormal things that happened that I finally put the two together. Oh, you're still here. Yeah, Yeah, thanks to you.
Yeah, possession and poltergeist, you know, they exist in our mythology because they're real. Yeah. And they are. And we've been told they aren't, but they really are. And they can be really negative, and they can have really bizarre effects, or they can be good. I mean, one day I was cooking a meal. My father used to be an amateur chef, and I was cooking a meal he had taught me, and I didn't quite taste right. And all of a sudden, I heard him whisper in my ear, "Oh, it needs this and this." I said, "Dad, Dad," and my wife was sitting at the table writing, and she said, "Is your father there?" And I said, "Yeah, I think he's telling me how to cook." And she said, "Can I talk to him?" And I said, "I don't know." So she started asking questions to me. And I swear I was talking in a different voice. And my father was answering my wife's questions. And he often came in there to that apartment and told me how to cook better than I usually do. So good. There's good on that side, but it is about having boundaries and saying no, and knowing that they're there, and deciding if that's energies you want to deal with on a regular basis. For a little while, I was doing something like ghost busting, because the word got out that I could see ghosts and communicate with them. So people, you know, would call me over to help them. But it just got to be, that was my existence. And I was like, I don't want to just be telling ghosts to go to the light. I want to have a fuller life.
There are a lot to say here. I've experienced that at the Stanley Hotel, where they're perfectly happy where they are. They're very cheerful. Yeah. They sing, they entertain you, and they let you go. There was another time when I was playing pool in the basement somewhere, and all of a sudden I was really good. And I knew because George was helping me make and once George stopped, then my pool subsequently didn't, I wasn't worth a darn. But while he was there, go ahead.
You were great. I was teaching my wife poker at one point, and she was losing radically. Not that I'm a good poker player, but she didn't know how to play. And then she said, "You know who used to be good at this? My grandmother." And then I said, "What's that smell?" And she said, "Oh, it's roses. My grandmother always wore rose perfume." And then she started beating the butt off of me.
Grandma, yay!
Grandma came through.
Okay, you know, there's so much. I'd love to talk with you again, because we just basically, you know, we just touched the surface. But you also have some people that are like, this is what's opening up right now. You have one woman that I'll be talking to, who she lost her daughter, and now they communicate.
Her son, yes. Diane Calderon has an amazing book out, Living and Loving Life All Day, Every Day, and we all should. And she really has a big connection with the other side and can speak to it beautifully. And then what my wife and I do is we help promote people who are either healers or readers or authors, and we think have good stuff. So we do a little boost for them to get them out to a wide audience. Langevin Action Marketing, we call it. And another woman we're working with is Sandra Wasco Flood. She's over 80, and she's a fanatic labyrinth person. She's a real hoot. Mm-hmm. And she wrote a book, The Labyrinth Path to Light and Peace. She's done labyrinths on the Capitol lawn and in schoolrooms all over, and she actually has reports of people being cured from autism and ADD from walking the labyrinths with her. So yeah, they're both pretty amazing.
Yeah, and then so there's so many ways that we can be in the world. There isn't one perfect way. Nobody is here because they're perfect. We're here because we're learning. We're learning.
And I like to think that our lives are like paintings, and that every day we're expanding the universe with our originality and our creativity as to what we bring to life.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, there's so many opportunities to explore and learn. And now, not only that, when we're talking about setting boundaries, that's real too. Knowing who you are, knowing what your thoughts are, and when they don't agree with what you normally would be saying, then question, where did that come from? That, like, the Sasquatch.
So
yeah, yes. It's whose is this? Whose does this belong to?
Right, exactly. And what do I believe? I mean, getting clear, a part of being really on a spiritual evolving path, I think, is getting clear on your base values, what's really important to you. And then when something crosses that, you say, is this me? Yeah. Is there a reason I'm allowing this to happen? And you stop it.
Yeah.
If it's not.
Yeah. Don't be a vampire.
Right. I mean, it's okay if you're a vampire that helps the other person, but not if you're sucking them dry.
That's kind of not a good thing. Karma. Okay, no, karma. No. Really, it does exist. I'm serious. Yes, it does.
Big time. If it goes around, it comes around.
The new book, the recent book, Travel Tales from Unknown Realities. And then the other two, there's so much more information because you've done a thing or two.
I've gotten around in the few years I've lived.
Yeah, I like the Carlos. I had the quote with Carlos Castaneda, who you know you've rubbed elbows with. You have everything needed for the extravagant journey that is your life, and I hope that's legit because nowadays finding quotes that are accurate is a challenge.
Yeah, and if there's one thing Carlos could do, it was come up with good words and tell great stories.
Okay, so we'll have to revisit that. We'll revisit that.
Gladly.
Okay. All right. Hey, you. Thank you. Thank
you. What a joy, Wendy. Thank you so much.
Michael Peter Langevin, Travel Tales from Unknown Realities. Links are in the description for the show. Thanks for listening.